Side 3, The Legend of Luke, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 89. Suddenly, Fulgrim burst out laughing at the little squirrel's antics, and took a big bite out of the proffered pasty.
"You ain't eaten all my breakfast up, little sir. Oh, no!"
Chugger nodded his head in agreement.
"Good hotter. Now, Chug, get your shoe bed and minty tea."
Fulgrim gobbled another mouthful of pasty.
"Why, thank 'ee, mate. Though I likes cordial better 'n mint tea. Maybe you could fetch me a couple of them strawberries, too. They look nice."
Tungro shook his head in amazement at the sight of Chugger feeding breakfast to his brother, both of them chatting away amiably as if they were old friends.
"Well, wallop me, Rudder. Will you look at that? Fulgrim never was the most civil of beasts. Back at the Holt he spoke to nobody, much less smile and chat like that. I reckon my brothers took a shine to your little squirrel."
Trimp was slightly apprehensive. She confided her fears to Dinny in a whisper that only he could hear.
"I'm not so sure I like Chugger being around Fulgrim. He's an otter who's eaten his enemies and is troubled in his mind. Who can tell what he'd do if the mood took him?"
The mole put aside his food, watching Fulgrim and Chugger.
"I don't think he gotten much twerry o'er, missy. Just you'm look a yon hotter. Why, he'm like an old mole mum wi' her infant mole babe. Wouldn't arm an air a Maister Chug's little head. No."
Trimp watched as Chugger fed Fulgrim some shrew bread. The little squirrel was talking to the otter as if he were a naughty dibbin.
"Now, if'n you don't eat all a shoe bed up, I won't not let you have no strawbies, Mr. Foal."
The hedgehog maid nodded in agreement with her mole friend.
"I think you're right, Den. They're firm friends."
When the meal was over, Martin and his group struck camp. Warm summer sun had lifted all the mist, and the broad stream glistened invitingly. Tungro hailed them as they were packing supplies aboard.
"My hearty thanks to ye, friends. We've got to go now. Safe journey to you and your mates, Martin, and fair weather attend ye to the north coast."
However, it was not that simple. Fulgrim refused to go with his brother. Digging himself into the bank sand, he resisted all their attempts to move him. Tungro stroked his strange brother's head coaxingly.
"Come on, Foal. Let's go back home together, matey. Your old bed's waiting for you, and every beast's wantin' to give you a great welcome. What do you say, eh?"
Chugger leaped from the raft and threw himself upon Fulgrim, hugging the scarred otter and wailing piteously.
"Wah-ha! Don't take Mr. Foal away! Wah-ha-ha!"
As if this were not sad enough, Fulgrim joined in, tears streaming from his one eye.
"Boo-hurr! Don't take me away from me, little pal. I wants to go with him. Boo-hoo-hurr!"
Tungro was greatly moved. Dashing a paw across his eyes, he appealed to Martin.
"Tell me, mate, what do I do?"
The warrior leaped ashore. Two swift slices of his sword set Fulgrim free from the ropes at his waist and paws.
"There's only one thing to do, friend. Let your brother come with us. We'll deliver him safe to your Holt on the return journey, I promise."
Fulgrim jumped up. With Chugger perched on his shoulders, he boarded the raft, both of them grinning from ear to ear. Tungro shook Martin's paw fervently.
"I know my brother'll be safe with good beasts like you and your friends, sir. Mayhap 'twill be good for him."
They sailed off downstream, waving goodbyes to the otters standing on the banks.
"See you sometime about autumn." "Aye, we'll be waitin', with a pot full of shrimp and hot root soup to welcome you."
"Good, we'll be looking forward to it."
"Watch out for Fulgrim at night. He's a terrible snorer."
"Rrrr, if an ye can outsnore this lot, sir, ye must be a good 'un."
"You speak for yourself, Denny Mole. I don't snore."
Oh, yes, he do, Miss Trimp. Odors are gone.
I wouldn't know, Din. When you're snoring, it drowns out everything, even thunderstorms.
The curious raft, with logboats tied to both sides, sailed off downstream into the soft summer morning. Tungro and his crew gave a final wave before sliding into the water and gliding sleekly upstream, home to their holt. It was midday when Logalog Furmo steered into a curving recess. Martin looked up at the shrew as he scrambled atop the steep, rocky bank.
"What have we stopped for, Furmo? Surely it's not time to eat already. We've hardly been afloat today."
"Come up here and look at this, Martin."
The warrior joined his friend on the bank top. Far ahead, he could see thick, extending pine woods flanking both sides of the stream. Martin peered hard at the dark mass.
"Trouble, do you think?"
The Gewasim chieftain voiced his thoughts.
"I noticed the stream starting to run swifter, so I thought it best to pull in and scout the land. No sense dashing into danger. That's if there's any there."
Martin mused for a moment, looking from the raft to the pines and back again, before making up his mind.
"Right. Here's what I suggest. You take Gaunt, I'll take Fulgrim. I wager he can smell vermin a league off. We split up and go both sides of the bank to scout those pine woods out. Leave the rest with the raft. Throw a kedge anchor over the stern. That'll slow them up so they won't be speeding into the pine wood area."
Furmo agreed with Martin's strategy. An old waterlogged willow limb, forked at one end, was weighted by lashing big chunks of rock to it. When it was cast over the raft's stern, it dragged heavily on the stream bed, slowing the vessel's progress considerably. Furmo and Gonf took the north bank. The raft dropped Martin and Fulgrim off on the south bank. Chugger shook a tiny paw at the warrior.
"You take good care of Mr. Fole, or I smack a you tail."
Martin nodded seriously at the little fella.
"Aye, aye, Cap'n Chug. I'll watch out for him, never fear."
Logalog Furmo had been right. The broad stream was surely moving faster, running deeper, too, Martin noticed as he trotted along the bank with Fulgrim at his side. Without the kedge anchor on its stern, both raft and logboats would go hurtling downstream. At noon, they reached the fringes of the pine woods. Gonf and Furmo waved across at Martin on the opposite side. He held both paws up, signaling them to wait. After a while, Fulgrim returned from scouting inside the fringe. He was carrying some ashes and a clump of grass stained dark purple, along with a dab of ochre, still wet from the stream. Urgently, he gestured for them to back off, away from the pines. When he judged they were far enough from the conifers, the otter signaled them down to the shallows, where they could converse across the stream. Gonf and Furmo waded in as deep as they dared. Martin and Fulgrim followed suit, the strong current pulling at them. The otter held up the stained grass and spoke.
"Painted ones in the woods. Beware."
Gonf and Furmo waded back to dry land. Fulgrim called after them.
"See you back at the raft."
Trimp helped the Gewasim shrews haul her friends aboard and looked questioningly at Furmo as he ordered the craft into the south bank behind a curve.
"What is it? What's happening?"
The shrew chieftain explained.
"Painted ones are in those pine woods ahead. Fulgrim found traces of the blackguards."
Trimp was plainly puzzled.
"What do you mean, painted ones?"
"No beast knows for sure, missy, but most of us thinks there's some kind of tree rats. My Gewasim ain't been down this far in seasons. Weren't any about then. I reckon they must have been driven out of their own territory and settled in the pines yonder. Painted ones is vicious savages, never just a few. They always come in big gangs. Those woods would be ideal for 'em. They paints themselves all over, like sunlight, stripes, and shadows. Painted ones live up in the trees, and woe betide any poor traveler trying to pass through their stamping grounds. Killin's second nature to 'em.
They're very good at disguises. You could be walking in the pines, thinking no beast is there, then bang, the villains have got you, and you're a dead un.
Denny shook his head sorrowfully.
It'd be a girt pity, 'cause we'm be orfully near ye seashores. I could feel it in my digging claws.
Trimp sighed sadly.
But we can't go any farther now.
Gaunt chucked her gently under the chin.
Lackaday, look at that long face, like a toad with toothache. Cheer up, pretty one, or you'll have it raining. Leave it to me, I've got a plan.
Denny wrinkled his nose.
You'm got a plan, sir?
Gaunt adopted his devil-may-care expression.
Why do you think they call me Prince of Mouse Thieves? Of course I've got a plan, you old tunnel grubber.
Martin prodded his friend's well-fed middle.
I hope 'tis a plan that'll work, matey.
Oh, indeed.
And did you ever know any of my plans that didn't work, oh swinger of swords?
Aye, lots of them, oh pincher of pies.
Well, this won't be one of that sort, oh noble whiskers.
It had better not be, oh pot-bellied soup swigger. Now tell on.
We won't wait till light. We'll set sail and shoot past them in the dark. They won't expect that.
The raft stayed tied to the bank until midnight. Then they cut loose the kedge anchor and hoisted the sail. Drifting out into a moonless dark midstream, Gonf nodded to Fermo, who was seated in the logboats with his guasum. Digging paddles deep, they shot the craft off downstream, with Martin, Denny, and Fulgrim punting long poles at the stern. A light breeze caught the sail, billowing it out beautifully. Gonf and Trimp laid out slings and heaps of well-rounded stream pebbles where they could be easily reached. The Prince of Mouse Thieves chuckled.
The speed she's going, we'll be through and past them afore they even guess we've arrived, eh, missy?
Covering Chugger's sleeping form with food sacks and loose canvas, Trent snuggled down by him.
I hope you're right, Gonf, for all our sakes. But mainly for this little mite's. I don't know what I'd do if any harm befell Chugger.
Fulgrim turned from his pole, file-sharpened teeth glinting in the darkness, his one good eye roving wildly.
If any wants to see dead beasts, pretty miss, take a look at any vermin puttin' a paw near my pal Chug.
Trimp shivered, certain that the scar-faced otter did not issue idle threats. As the flotilla of raft and logboats neared the pine wood, myriad eyes, aglow with evil intent, watched it from the bankside trees on both sides. Small, harsh, excited whispers sounded through the conifers.
Yik, 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 yik! Here they come! Many, many lots of shrubs and micers, too! Yikka, yikka! Betcher these vittles, too! Lots of vittles! Faster, faster into de trap! Yikka, yikka! Fatty mole digger and edge biggie! Have a fun with those!
Then the raft was into the wooded area. Martin congratulated Gonf quietly on his daring scheme.
Well done, mate. We're shooting through like a shaft from a bow. Not much can stop us now.
No sooner had the words left his mouth than the raft hit a thick series of vine ropes stretched at different heights above and below the water. Every beast aboard was thrown flat with the impact, and both leading logboats and the front of the raft were jammed fast in a cunning trap. 11. Martin was first to spring upright. He lashed about with the long putting pole as painted ones dropped from the trees onto the raft. Several were sent screeching into the water. Fermo and his shrews began laying about them with their logboat paddles, hollow thonking noises sounding as they struck tree rats in midair. Screams and splashes, mingled with roars and shouts, rent the blackness of the stream between the dark spreading pines. It was a scene of total chaos. Fulgrim groped his way to the canvas, protecting Chugger and Trimp, and stood over them, flailing viciously, the air thrumming as he wielded his long pole.
Whack, flock, thunk, splat.
Gonf and Denny were hard at it with their poles. Panting heavily, Martin called to them,
"There's too many of them! We can't keep this up! Hold the vessel as best you can. I'll be back soon. If not, go without me. That's an order."
He broke his pole over the backs of three who were trying to climb aboard, then dived into the fast-flowing stream. As soon as he felt himself hurled against the ropes by the current, Martin latched his foot paws onto the heavy vines and unsheathed the great sword from his back. It was tremendously hard trying to swing his blade in the rushing water, but swing it the mouse warrior did. He hacked and hewed with might and main until his grip was frozen to the sword by cold water and weariness. By a superb feat of will, he forced himself to continue. Heavy, wet strands struck his face as the razor-sharp blade whipped through them, and water filled his mouth as he roared like a wild beast, battling the powerful woven ropes of wet vine. Lowering the blade underwater, Martin sawed furiously at the ones that he had twined his footpaws into, ducking his head beneath the surface and hunching both shoulders to put more force into his efforts. Then the raft was running overhead, scraping his back as it was liberated from the trap. Martin went head over tail, automatically shifting the sword to one paw and reaching out frantically with the other as the vessel sped forward. Denny felt some beast grab his footpaw as he stood astern, swinging his pole. He was about to deal, whoever it was, a resounding blow with the pole, but when Martin's head emerged from the stream water.
"Den, the pole, quick!"
The mole shot his pole into the water and Martin grabbed it. Throwing his sword onto the raft, he struggled aboard with Denny's help. The raft was still swarming with painted ones. Martin seized the fabulous blade and, whirling it aloft, he gave full cry to the battle call of badger lords.
"Eulalia!"
Screeching with fright, the tree vermin threw themselves from the raft, splashing frenziedly for shore. Gonf threw back his head and roared with laughter.
"Ha, ha, ha, ha! Look at 'em go! The old Eulalia's worth a dozen fighters. And let me say, matey, that 'un of yours was a right blood freezer. I near jumped out of my fur."
Martin was grinning as he slumped wearily down to the deck.
"Let's just say it was an additional idea to make your plan work. I was far too tired to do anything except shout."
"Ow, ow! What are you villains doing to me?"
Trimp and Chugger scrubbed roughly at the warrior with clean, dry food sacks. The little squirrel growled,
"Be still and stop a shouting. We're drying you off. Don't want to catch a deaf of cold, do you?"
The hedgehog maid was hard put to keep a straight face. Her squirrel babe was becoming quite a one for being severe with other beasts. She cleaned Martin's ears out roughly.
"That's the stuff, Chug. You tell him. Warriors have to get dry, too, same as any other creature."
Luckily, none of the friends were seriously injured, though there were the usual number of bumps, cuts, scratches, and scrapes sustained, as in any roughhouse encounter with vermin. Trimp and Log-a-Log Firmo set about ministering to the slight casualties, while Gonf and Denny kept a weather eye out for any likely berth, now they had left the pine wood behind. A small midstream island loomed up out of the darkness, perfect as a resting place for the remainder of the night. However, after their hazardous scrape with the painted ones, they were far too keyed up for sleeping. Guasim cooks built a small fire in the shelter of some bushes and cooked up a cauldron of vegetable soup. Gonf took some soft bread and chopped scallions, made bubbling bobs, and tossed them in the cauldron. Trimp sat around the fire with the rest, feeling a strong sense of camaraderie with them, laughing, chatting, and fishing for bubbling bobs with clean, sharp twigs. Firmo regaled them with a comic song called The Festive Fight.
"One dark and stormy night, as the sun set in the east, to Grandma's house I went, for to partake of a feast. With frogs and fat hedgehogs, some otters and a sparrow, and a squirrel who attended too, armed with a bow and arrow. The seed cake had been served when a dormouse in a bonnet took one bite. Oh, what a sight! She broke her teeth upon it. Then backward fell a mole, tail first into the custard. Old Grandpa grabbed his spoon, and looking quite disgusted, he hit the mole a smack. Then, like a flash of lightning, An otter brained him with a flan. That started off the fightin'. We fenced with celery sticks, with pies and puddings pelted. The squirrel with the bow by a pot of soup got belted. A sparrow flung a scone. It laid the otter senseless. Then Grandma swung her pan and left us all defenseless. Two frogs sailed out the door, a hedgehog up the chimney, whilst me and old Grandpa to the mantelpiece hung grimly. So hark and hear my tale. Stay safe, at home, and starve, sir. Steer clear of Grandma's house when there's going to be a feast there.
Chugger had fallen asleep leaning against Fulgrim, a soggy, bubbling bob still clutched in his grubby paw. After the fight with the Painted Ones, Trimp trembled fitfully, thinking what might have happened had they fallen into the claws of the foe. However, the feeling passed as she looked around at the cheery faces of her friends. Ribbing one another good-naturedly and chuckling, they sat around the fire, finishing off the meal with gusto. No beast would guess that but a short while ago they had been battling for their lives and hers. Allowing her eyes to close slowly, she snuggled down on some dry moss. Who would not feel safe in the company of such brave creatures? Murmuring stream water soon had them all lulled, with the exception of Martin and Fulgrim, who sat, outwardly relaxed, but inwardly alert. Fading to glowing embers, the fire burnt down. Somewhere a nightjar called, and moon shadows cast soft patterns through lazy, breeze-stirred foliage. Peace lay over the little island in midstream, awaiting the calm hours of dawn. Day broke fine and clear, with a warm summer wind blowing westerly. Log-a-log Fermo hopped aboard the raft, wetting a paw and holding it up.
"Hoist that sail, mates, and ship the paddles! We're on a good fast run to the big sea!"
Picking up speed, the raft fairly zinged along the broad water course. With his bushy tail blowing forward over both ears, Chugger perched backward in the bows of the lead logboat, shouting aloud with exhilaration,
"Woo-wee! Us going to sea!"
Denny clung nervously to a stay rope, not too sure whether he was fond of the vessel's wild ride downstream.
"Zerlog, bain't us'n's a-goin' e bit farstier?"
Log-a-log laughed and performed a nimble jig round the edges of the logboats flanking the raft.
"Fast, me little fat mate, fast! See the way those banks down yonder take a deep dip? When she hits there, you'll know what fast means."
The mole shut his eyes tight, grabbing the stay rope tighter, as Fermo gave it a mischievous twang. Fulgrim and Trimp rescued Chugger from his precarious position and tied a line to his chubby middle, whereupon he promptly hopped back to his former position. Fermo began booming out a song in his wonderful bass voice.
"You stay aft, mate, I'll stay fore. Mind the rocks and watch the shore. Like good shipmates, you and me. Roll down to meet the sea. Fast as you can wish, through the waters like a fish, our old craft do wend its way on this bright summer's day. With spray in your face, and a crackin' pace, and a runnin' stream afore, if you never lack a wind at your back, then who could ask for more? Oh, rum-a-doodle-i-do, go where I go, rum-a-doodle-i-do, follow me."
The raft bucked sharply, entering a canyon of buff-hued rock. Every beast yelled and held on to something. Chugger was thrown into the water from his perilous perch. Trimp screamed in alarm, but Fulgrim had a good grip on the line, and with a powerful heave, he swung the little fellow back on board.
"Up you come, rascal! There, gonf! Look what I caught! A chugfish! Funny little critter! Never seen one with a tail that long!"
Shaking water from his ruffled fur, the baby squirrel drew himself imperiously to his full height.
"I nor a chugfish, I a little squiggle."
White water boiled about the surface, while high banks narrowed and dipped sharply downward. Fermo gave orders to stow the sail, and his guwassome shrews took up their positions at the logboat's oars, keeping the vessel in midstream with strong, skillful strokes. Soon, they were all thoroughly drenched by spray and unable to hear each other talk because of the roaring waters. Logalog and Martin, with long poles, sculled at the after end. The warrior mouse noticed that the shrew chieftain was no longer singing and smiling. Grim-faced and silent, he struggled to keep the raft on course. Now the raft really began to buck, side to side and up and down, sometimes rearing high out of the stream and returning to hit the water with a resounding splash. Twice it was whirled completely around on the treacherous current, Martin and Fermo poling furiously to turn it. Trent knew they were in trouble when Gonf pushed her and Chugger flat, shouting at them to hold tight. Gripping the tough vines that held their craft together, Trent locked both footpaws around her little friend. Lifting her face, the hedgehog maid took a quick glance ahead. What she saw took her breath away. A rainbow bridged either bank, shining through a misty curtain of cascading water mist. The raft rushed through it. Then there was nothing. Martin heard himself yell with surprise as his pole snapped on a rock at the waterfall's edge. The entire vessel, raft and log boats, sailed out into space. Logalog's voice cut across the sudden silence.
"Hang on, mates!"
Then the thunderous roar of falling water took over. They were falling down, down, with a view of beach and sea to the front, and an awesome sheet of rushing water at their back. Gripping fiercely to anything within reach, the breath torn from their mouths, they plunged downward, tilting as the raft went head first for what seemed like an eternity. Down, 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 vroom! The broad surface of a pool at the bottom exploded with the impact. By its own momentum, the vessel was plunged deep into the pool, breaking into pieces as it went. Water rushed into Trent's mouth. Her eyes opened. Everything was cold, silent, and vague. Half-conscious, she stared about. Somewhere high above, the water was billowing in thick white clouds, and she tried to fight down panic as she felt Chugger pawing feebly at her. They were both trapped under a log from the raft, which had become wedged in the rocks at the pool's bottom. Then the little squirrel's paws went limp. Panic surged through Trimp with a sudden realization that both her and Chugger's lives were going to end, trapped underwater and alone. Bubbles burst from her mouth as water flooded relentlessly in. Forgetting her plight for a moment, the hedgehog maid felt a tremendous wave of pity tug at her heart for Chugger. The little squirrel was still a baby. What a sad way for him to end a tragically short life. She reached down and held his paw, thinking that at least he would have her with him. Then the arrival of Fulgrim jolted her failing senses. Setting himself between the rocks, he bent his body, levering outward with all four paws, veins standing out on his neck as he added the strength of his rudder-like tail and the back of his broad skull. Fulgrim pushed until the scars on his face stood out like blue ropes. There was a grinding crunch, followed by a muffled clonking noise. The log floated upward, free, the rocks trapping it having been forced apart by the otter's wild strength. Fulgrim seized Chugger by his tail and Trimp by one paw. Setting himself firm in the sand, he thrust mightily upward, tail and footpaws working in unison. In a stream of bubbles, all three shot to the surface. Willing paws pulled them ashore. Martin took a quick check of his crew.
"Denny! Where's Denny?"
The words had hardly left his mouth before Fulgrim plunged in again, streaking underwater like an arrow. White sand and shell fragments, together with weeds and grains of rock, clouded the bottom a pearly gray color. Fulgrim swam to an overturned logboat and wormed his way underneath. The otter's head broke water in a small air pocket trapped in the upturned vessel, and Denny's head was facing him. The mole tugged his snout in polite relief.
"Good day to 'ee, zur. I hope some beast 'ud come afore 'ee air runned out in yer. I don't mind tellin' 'ee, I'm gertly affrightened o' livin' underwater. Us moles be like that, happy underground, but sad underwater. Oh."
The otter showed his filed teeth in a smile.
"Then shut your eyes, hold your breath, and hang on to my paw, Mr. Din. Soon have you back on land, matey."
Chugger shot fountains of water everywhere as he recovered.
Trimp, who was no worse for her ordeal, sat watching Fermo anxiously.
"Oh, say he's going to be all right, sir."
Chuckling, the Gowasum leader pressed gently on the little squirrel's stomach, and another jet of water arose.
"This'll be fine, missy, don't get yourself in a fret. I seen shrew babes swaller twice that amount. It never seemed to harm the little fellers a bit."
Chugger opened one eye, his paw rising to point accusingly at Fermo.
"You keep punching Chugger's tummy, and I swirt water in your eye, shoo."
Fermo held Chugger upside down and shook him thoroughly, letting the baby squirrel go as he snapped at his footpaws.
"See, I told yer, miss, he's stronger than a growed eel."
Then he rolled himself into the warm sand until he looked like a white mole ghost. He went and sat by Martin, who shook his head and burst out laughing.
"Have a rest. Go to North Shores. Make it a holiday. Take all summer. Some rest, eh, Den? Some holiday."
Gonf dug a big raft splinter from his tail and sighed with relief.
"Well, look at me, mates. I'm enjoying myself no end. Only one thing missing, though."
Martin knew what was coming, so he interrupted Gonf.
"Food. That's what it is, isn't it, you felonious, famine-faced soup-stealer?"
Gonf picked his teeth nonchalantly with the splinter.
"How'd you guess, noble britches? Ahoy there, Fermo. What's the position on victuals, matey?"
One of the Gowasum cooks answered for his leader.
"Flowers ruined. Fruit's all right, though. Plenty of fresh water in that pool. Biscuits we baked this morning are lost in the stream. I reckon we could stand a few fresh supplies of whatever the land has to offer hereabouts."
Martin took charge, issuing orders.
"Right. Any beast who feels up to it can forage for food. We'll split up around these hills and dunes on the shoreline. Denny, you stay here with Miss Trimp and Chugger and take a rest. See what you can salvage from the wreckage."
12. Trimp was still feeling a bit sick and dizzy from her ordeal in the pool, but with Chugger about, it was difficult to rest.
"Chugger, come away from that water. It's very deep."
"Oh, Chuck know it deep. I been a bottom of it."
"Yes, well, that's where you'll find yourself again if you don't come away. Come on, this instant."
"Yeah, leave me alone. Me and Mr. Din doing a job, see?"
The mole picked him up with one huge digging claw.
"I can do e job on my own, thank ye, meister. Now, you'm do like Miss Trimp tell ye, and no cheek from ye."
A fox appeared, as if from nowhere. Behind him were four roguish-looking vermin, an assortment of rats and ferrets. The fox looked the wickedest of all five. He was obviously their leader, and wore big hooped brass earrings and tattered silks. Faded tattoos showed on the paw holding a sharp, single-headed axe. He gestured at Chugger.
"Ha-har, young'un, you listen to your elders and don't be cheekin' 'em. Avast now, cullies, what have we here?"
One of the vermin sniggered.
"Dinner, that's what we got."
Shaking his head in censure, the fox growled,
"Stow that kind of gab, Frib. These here are gentle beasts. A mite grubby, but respectable. Ain't that right, missy?"
Trimp had decided instantly that she did not like the vermin or their leader, but her voice showed no fear.
"Who are you, and what do you want?"
Strutting insolently about, the fox rummaged through the salvaged supplies with his axe blade. He chose an apple, polishing it on his ragged sleeve.
"I could ask you the same question, me pretty."
Trimp picked up a solid spar of raftwood.
"I'm not your pretty, and is usually considered good manners to ask before helping yourself to the food of others."
Scornful sniggers echoed from the four vermin. Pausing with the apple halfway to his mouth, the fox grinned.
"This un's got me quaking in me boots, mates. Got me. She's a right mouthy little baggage, ain't she?"
Trimp brandished her wooden spar, trembling slightly, but still game for trouble.
"Aye, but you'll find I can back up my words when dealing with bullies. Now who are you and what do you want here?"
Making as if to go, the fox sidled past Trimp. Suddenly he turned, knocking the spar from the hogmaid's paw with a deft flick of his axe blade. Then he went for him with a deep growl, but one of the vermin tripped him with a cutlass blade. He tried to rise, only to find another one menacing his throat with a pike. Biting into the apple, the fox pulled a face and spat the piece out. He held the axe under Trimp's chin, his voice hard and commanding.
"I'm Sholobar, lord of these coasts. See that boat out there? Well, 'tis mine. I patrols these waters, and—"
Trimp interrupted him sharply. "I don't see any boat out there." Sholobar growled at one of the Burmen.
"Where did you berth the boat, Grimleg?"
"Behind the point, like you told me to, Cap'n."
The fox shrugged.
"Well, no matter. Point is, missy, you're on my land. All around ye, far as ye can see, belongs to me. Even this fresh water pool. So you're a trespasser, see?"
Trimp pushed the axe away from her chin and laughed in the bully's face contemptuously.
"Ha, ha! Don't talk stupid. No beast owns the shores and sea."
Shaking with rage, Sholobar raised his axe at her.
"Snot-nosed little spikeback, I'll skin you alive."
Chugger bounded forward and sank his teeth in the fox's leg.
"Yow! Leggo! Get him off of me! Yarr!"
The little fellow clung like a limpet, sinking his teeth deeper and growling fiercely. One of the vermin grabbed him by the tail. Trimp seized Sholobar's paw, trying to stop him swinging the axe at Chugger. The fox roared,
"Arr! Stretch him out, Grimleg! Yah! I'll chop the little brat in two!"
He shook his arm, trying to loosen Trimp's hold, while Chugger's little teeth dug deeper and deeper.
"Frib, get this brat off of me! Ayar! He's biting me leg to the bone! Ow, ow, ow!"
Before the fox could issue another yell, Fulgrim came hurtling out of nowhere and struck him like a thunderbolt. There was an ominous crack. The fox's head went backward at a crazy angle under the force of the otter's blow, and he fell slain upon the sand. Taking one swift look at Fulgrim, the four vermin fled for their lives. Martin and Gaunt were rounding the corner of a nearby dune, carrying wild onions and dandelion shoots, and two of the fleeing vermin ran straight into them. Gaunt butted one in the stomach, laying him out, gasping for air. Martin tripped the other one and grabbed him hard by the scruff. The other two vermin ran the opposite way, only to find themselves surrounded by Gooasam rapier points. Hauling the four vermin roughly along, the foragers arrived back at the poolside. Martin had to place himself between the captives and the scar-faced otter, who was trying to get at them with a dead fox's axe. Martin spoke calmingly to him.
"No more slaying, friend. They've had enough. You four, sit down there and explain yourselves. What's been going on here? The truth now."
Grimleg the ferret managed a good act, whining pitifully.
"We're not but poor beasts, sir. We roams the sands looking for victuals to keep skin and bones together, sir. Woe is us, sir. We fell foul of this robber band. We begged them for food, but they attacked us. That little un tried to eat our cap'n, or Sholobar, and yon Ogmaid was going to brain us with a club. Sir, 'tis the truth, I tell ye. See that savage river dog? That un slew our mate Sholobar for no reason at all, sir. And that mad mole had a sword he was going to kill me with."
Grimleg picked up the cutlass he had dropped when he had fled.
"Aye, this is the very blade. I swears it on me mother's eyes, sir. They'd have murdered us if you hadn't arrived."
Trimp noted Martin's wink before he turned to her stern-eyed and demanded, "Is this true? Did you attack these poor creatures? Speak!" Trimp caught on immediately. Cringing and rubbing her paws nervously, she groveled on the sand, performing a passable imitation of a vermin lying its way out of trouble.
"Oh, 'tis true, Your Honor, 'tis true. We've had a wicked upbringing, you see. But spare our lives and we'll give up bad living. On me grandma's whiskers, I swear we will. Kind sir, just let us sail off in our boat that's moored behind the south point, and you'll never see eye nor air of us again, on me oath."
At the mention of a boat, Fermo exchanged glances with Martin.
"So they've got a boat. What do you think, matey?"
Surveying the wreckage of what had once been their vessel, Martin nodded, as if considering the matter.
Aye. It'd save us long days of walking, eh, Gonth?
Gonth drew his dagger and stood over the four vermin.
Fear not, friends. Justice has come to your aid. These ruffians, the Hog Maid and her crew that attacked you so wickedly, here's how we'll deal with them. My friends and I will confiscate their boat and take them with us as deck slaves for punishment. That way they'll bother honest creatures like yourselves no more. What do you say to that?
Grimleg and his vermin companions were nonplussed. In one fell swoop they had been foiled of their prey, lost their boat, and also their captain to boot. The ferret was about to object when Fermo drew his rapier and stood facing him, cold-eyed. His voice, when he spoke, was like ice.
I'd say 'twas a good idea. These honest beasts should make no objection, as long as the tale they told us is true. 'Cause I can't abide a liar, you see. Liars is worse than thieves or murderers, I always say. Show me a liar, and I'll silence his untruthful tongue forever. Grr, I can't stand liars.
Gonth placed his paw on Fermo's rapier hilt.
Put up your blade, matey. These are honest creatures.
Grimleg and his vermin nodded furiously, trying hard to look poor but honest. Gonth pointed an accusing paw at Trimp and her friends.
Now this lot, they're a different kettle of fish. They've got the look of savage, murdering villains to me.
Fulgrim narrowed his one eye and squinted wickedly.
Aye, I'm a bad lot, all as I've been. Ain't happy less I'm slaying poor honest beast with me axe.
Chugger bared his teeth and emitted a small growl.
Oh, we's villains sure enough. Chop a tail off and cut your throats, we will. Grrr.
Then he squinched up his snout and made evil gestures with his digging claws at all and sundry.
Brrr, aye, and stuffin' he tails up in he noses. Grrr.
Trimp kicked sand at the seated vermin.
Ha! Gimme a sharp blade and a cooking pot, and I'll show you what I do to poor honest beasts. Yarr!
Gonth gave a shudder of mock horror.
Enough of that foul talk, you blackguards! Off to the boat with you, and keep a bridle on those wicked tongues!
Martin drew his sword and marched the miscreants off. Gonth and the Gooasim shrews had to bite their lips to keep from bursting out laughing. Logalog Fermo kept his face solemn. He patted the backs of the four miserable vermin heftily, then shook each one by the paw with a grip that caused them to wince.
Lucky for you we came along, my friends. Very lucky.
One of the Gooasim cooks whispered to Gonth in a voice that all could hear.
I hopes they thanks the chief. He can't stand ungrateful beasts. Why, I've seen Fermo take his blade and...
Before the sentence was finished, the vermin were gabbling aloud in panic.
Aye, lucky indeed for us, sire, thank ye. Don't know what we'd have done without ye, chief. True, true. We'll never forget how you saved us. Thank ye kindly, sir.
Gonth gathered up the vermin weapons, tut-tutting like an old mousewife.
Nasty, sharp things. Don't fret, friends, we'll take care of these, lest you injure yourselves on them.
Fermo presented them with the piece of wood that Trimp had intended using.
Sorry about your friend, the fox. You can dig a nice resting place for him with this. Goodbye to ye.
As they marched off down the beach, one of the vermin, a big skinny rat, kicked the sand ruefully.
Huh. Why did we ever come here in the first place? That's what I'd like to know.
Grimleg whacked him over the head with a piece of wood.
Oh, shut up, screwdose.
Logalog Fermo was delighted with the new vessel. He splashed about in the shallows, admiring it as the others clambered aboard. It was a long, flat-bottomed skiff with a single square midsail, bluffed at the stern and pointed at the bows, fashioned from seasoned beech, elm, and rowan wood. It had oarlocks and paddles, four to each side, plus a fine carved tiller and rudder. There was a stern shelter of canvas stretched over a frame of willow, for cover in rough weather. When Fermo climbed aboard, he went beneath the shelter, then emerged, crowing with joy.
Look at Gooasum. A little stone hearth and a clay oven, and 3 good bench seats. I reckon this craft'd hold 40 of crew. I tell you, mates, whoever built this vessel knew what they were doing. True crafts beasts they must have been. A real beauty, eh, Gonfo?
The mouse thief shook his head in amazement.
I wager 'twill go like the wind, too. Where'd those old bad beasts ever lay paws on a marvelous craft like this?
Chuggers swaggered about, now immersed in his new role as a pirate captain.
Us robbed it off of old Frog Dad and boiled his tail for vickles. Hee hee hee.
Trimp reprimanded him sharply. That's quite enough of that kind of talk, thank you, Chugger. The miscreant shot up the mast pole, scowling darkly.
I nor a Chugger no more. I a villain, a orful bad un.
Then he went to sit beneath the stern awning.
Well, I bain't a bad un no more, sir, oh no. It hurts my face, a scowlin' and a snarlin' all the time. I'm not but a good old mole, I suppose.
Tacking close to the shore, they threaded northward. Fermo and his Gooasum shrews were in absolute ecstasies about their new craft. Being great boat builders, they could readily appreciate the skill and ingenuity that had gone into its construction.
I thought you were only traveling with us as far as the shore, my friend,
Martin reminded the shrew gently.
Weren't you supposed to return to your camp and tribe once we were safely downstream?
Fermo was sniffing the deck, licking the mast, listening to the prow timbers, and rapping his paws experimentally on the carved elm oarlocks. He smiled absently at Martin.
Oh, you mean going back upstream to the domestic life? Well, I tell you, matey, I'd get a right old telling off from me wife if and I went back to tell her we lost the log boats and raft together. Huh, I might be a log-a-log, but my Mrs. Honeysuckle, she's the real ruler of our tribe. She'd scalp the ears off me if and I went back boatless.
Martin nodded his agreement.
So what are you going to do?
A crafty smile flitted across the shrew's rugged face.
I'm going to stay with you till your adventure's done. Then you can sail back home with me and explain to me darling wife how you couldn't have done without me and my Gooasum crew. In fact, you'll be so pleased with me that you'll present me with this boat to make up for the ones we lost. In return, I'll throw a smashing feast for you and your crew, and we'll top it off by naming the vessel Honeysuckle, in me dear wife's honor. Done?
Grinning broadly, Martin clasped Fermo's paw.
Done, you golden-tongued rascal.
13. The days that followed were sunny and uneventful, and good progress was made by the little ship Honeysuckle. She was ideally built for skimming the coastal waves, responding quickly to any vagrant wind, slip tide, or rock shoal by just a touch on her tiller. Chugger was a constant source of amusement. The little squirrel had promoted himself to captain, still keeping up his new identity as a villainous sea rover. Fulgrim and Trimp often had to stifle smiles and chuckles at his antics. Swaggering about the deck, armed with a stick for a sword, he growled out orders to all and sundry.
Get a vickles cooked! Or I throw you to sharkers. Keep a tiller straight, Mr. Fermo, or Cap'n Chug make a scrub a deck. I'll sing a funny song, or I chop a tails off.
Gaunt saluted him smartly.
Cap'n Chug, sir, I've checked the provisions and we're running low on everything. We need more victuals.
Chugger stroked his chin reflectively, as he had seen Martin do. Then he waved his tiny paws irately.
Well, sail a ship to the shore and get lots of more vickles. Don't annoy me, Mouse. I'm busy being cap'n.
Gaunt looked to Fermo.
Well, we do need more provisions.
The shrew chieftain tacked the vessel artfully across 2 cresting rollers, watching the shoreline intently.
We'll sail till evening, then put in to shore. A night on dry land'll do us good. Tomorrow will be time enough to send out a foraging party. Or, if and the cap'n approves.
Chugger was binding a colored shrew headband around his brow to make himself look more dashing. He nodded.
Good, good. That's what we do. All hush now and be quiet. Cap'n Chug gonna take his nap.
By evening, the weather had grown noticeably brisker. Fulgrim pointed shoreward to where the beach was sandy and rock-strewn, dotted with dunes and backed by grassland with stunted trees and bushes.
Best chance a landfall there, afore the light fades.
Leaning on the tiller, Fermo sent the honeysuckle skimming toward the beach. There, the crew waded ashore and took up the ship's bowline while they waited on Fermo's word. Watching the incoming waves carefully, he yelled as a high one caught the stern,
"Take her in, me hearties! Heave!"
Without any difficulty, they ran the vessel up high and dry above the tide line, where it lay safe. Denny immediately trundled up the beach, pleased to be on dry land, calling back to them,
"There be an old boat up here. I thought it were a rock."
Upside down and half buried in the sand, the boat lay, long forgotten on the deserted shore. Fulgrim viewed it wistfully.
"Wonder who it belonged to?"
Trent ventured closer, peering into the dark cavern formed by the upturned craft.
"I don't know, but it'd make a snug shelter for the night. We could get a fire going and make a decent meal with the last of our rations. Come on, it'll be fun."
Before any beast could stop her, the hedgehog maid stooped and scurried under the wrecked hull.
"Yeek!"
She came scampering out hastily, with a huge red-backed crab chasing her, its claws open and extended aggressively. She hopped clear, but the crab stood outside on the sand, menacing the travelers, protecting its shelter. It was joined by another crab of equal size and ferocity. Trimp was shaking like a leaf, and Chugger hid behind her.
"Yah! It a big a spider! No, two big a spiders now!"
Martin stayed Fulgrim's paw as it strayed to the axe he had taken from the vermin.
"Easy now. Killing's not necessary, friend. They're not spiders, Chug. They're crabs.
Pretty big uns, too.
But not to worry. Our Prince of Mouse Thieves knows how to deal with crabs, don't you, oh chubby one?"
Gaunt bowed low, muttering to his friend,
"Less of the chubby one, matey."
He turned to Trimp.
"Fear not, pretty one. Crabs and I are old chums. Fermo, build a fire over yonder and bring me 2 long pieces of wood, will you? Stand clear, the rest of you."
While Fermo and his gowasum shrews built a fire of driftwood, both crabs held their ground, never going forward or back, but scrabbling sideways with their fearsome pincers wide open, giving out danger signals to the intruders. Gonf took the 2 long wooden spars offered by a shrew and bound them at both ends with rags soaked in lamp oil, keeping one eye on the crabs.
"These should do fine. Now watch this and remember, mates. A crab's the daftest creature living. Once he latches on to something, he won't let go, unless 'tis food he can push into his silly mouth. And these poles ain't food."
He charged the nearest crab, with the pole held out horizontally, shouting,
"Come on, old shellback, bite on this!" Clack!
The creature's powerful claws seized the pole.
"Now one for your old pal there. Bite on this, stalk eyes!"
Gaunt thrust the second pole at the other crab in like manner. Obediently, the fearsome pincers grabbed it. Boldly, the mouse thief stood a hair's breadth from both crabs and turned his back on them to face the audience.
"You see? They ain't got enough brains between them to let go of those poles, and while they're hanging on to 'em, they can't hurt us with their nippers. Now, they'll stand there like that till the crack of doom if I let 'em. But here's the best way to get rid of crabs. Watch!"
Taking a blazing piece of wood from the fire, Gonf raced nimbly around both crabs, touching the flames to both ends of each pole. Agitatedly, the big crustaceans continued their sideways patrol, stalk eyes waving wildly in the firelights they were carrying, stumbling and tripping in dumb panic. The mouse thief advanced upon them, swinging his crackling torch.
"You rock-backed oafs, go on! Get out of here afore your nippers get burned! Go on, into the water with you!"
He chased them a short distance down the beach until the crabs' tiny brains realized the answer to their burning problem. They scuttled off sideways into the sea. Gaunt skipped back up the beach, chuckling,
"Ain't got the sense they was born with, those two."
Every beast waited while the fearless Gaunt went beneath the boat hull with his lighted torch.
"Come on in, buckos! The place is empty."
Gewasum cooks liked nothing better than to improvise with their cooking. That night they did the crew proud. Barley broth with wild onions and dried water shrimp, hot mint and dandelion tea, and the pièce de résistance, a big pan lined with thick slices of honey-soaked shrew bread, into which they placed all their dried apples and pears and hazelnuts, mixed with the last of their fresh berries, black currants, strawberries, and raspberries. The pan was covered with a flat slab of stone and placed on the fire. After a while, the aromas drifted temptingly around in the shelter formed by the upturned boat. While Fulgrim was not looking, Chugger emptied his barley broth into the otter's bowl and sat happily licking his seashell spoon.
"Come on, Mr. Fole. Eat up all barley broth, or you don't get no puddin'. See? Chug, eat all his up. Yum, yum."
The scarred otter tugged his friend's bushy tail fondly.
"Ain't it strange how a bowl can fill itself up again? You're a 40-faced little skin-a-malinker, Cap'n Chug."
The pudding was perfectly cooked, a triumph. Every beast had their bowls heaped, and they tucked in willingly.
This is marvelous.
Best I ever tasted. Piping hot and delicious. Brr, aye. Gertly nice and terrible tasty it bees. Any chance a second helpin's there, Cookie?
If and you wants to end up in the sea with your crab mates, Gonf, just keep calling me Cookie.
Oops, sorry. Oh, well-furred and beautiful Gewasum boss. Oh, all right, pass your bowl here.
Outside, the night grew cold, with a stiff wind driving sand spirals across the shore. Fortunately, the shelter was in the lee of the wind, and they sat around the cheery fire amid the good food and banter. During a lull in the conversation, Trimp cocked an ear to the opening.
"Listen, can you hear anything, Martin?"
Martin listened.
"Aye, like a sort of moaning."
Fermo refilled Denny's bowl.
"Probably the wind."
But Martin's paw was on his sword. He leaned forward alert.
"That's not the wind. Listen carefully."
In the silence that followed, they all heard the audible moaning from outside, eerie, ghostly.
Ooh-ah, ooh-ah.
It seemed to fade and rise with a lonely wind out on the moonless stretches of coastline. Fermo shuddered.
"Don't sound like nothing living to me."
This remark started off a lot of fearful speculation.
"Mayhap 'tis the spirits of dead beasts?"
"Aye, mate. Could have been the long-dead crew of this boat."
"They say strange things happen on old lonely shores."
"I've heard tell of that, too. That they comes back on dark nights to visit the spot where they perished."
"Ooh-er, us'n should have stayed aboard-y boat on e sea."
"Hark! I can hear 'em singing words."
Sure enough, the words came clear and distinct. Beneath the boat, fur stood on end, paws trembled, and creatures drew closer to the fire. They could not avoid hearing the wailing dirge, which rose and blended with the sighing winds.
"Ooh-ah, ooh-ah, from the deep cold seas afar, spirits of the dead arise, rattling bones and sightless eyes, from the deep mysterious sea, wandering lonely beach and shore, we must walk eternally, wandering, seeking evermore, when the pale moon sends its light, or in dark and starless night, roaming near and traveling far." "Ooh-ah,
Ooh-ah.
Trim's face was blanched with fear. Chugger was trembling like a leaf, and she hugged him close to her. The breath caught in her throat as a spectrally hollow knock sounded on the upturned boat hull. Whack, 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 followed by unearthly sounding voices.
Leave the coast, desert our shore, or stay here forevermore. Go by land or go by sea. Heed these warning words and flee.
Martin looked at the terror-stricken faces around him. Drawing his sword, he turned to the only one beside himself who did not appear to be affected by the eerie chance.
Well, what do you make of that little lot, Gonf?
The mouse thief drew his dagger.
Don't see how a ghost could be solid enough to knock its paws on a boat hull, mate. You stay here in case it's some kind of trap. Take care of these dithering daisies. I'll go and take a look out there.
Gonf slid out into the night. A moment later, he reappeared, a great deal faster than he had left. Martin gripped his friend's paw as the dagger slid from it. This was not like Gonf, who sat ashen-faced and trembling. The warrior gazed into his haunted eyes.
What is it, mate? What did you see out there?
Gonf swigged down a beaker of dandelion and mint tea. He regained his composure slightly, though it was some time before he managed to speak.
I tell you, matey, I never want to see aught like that again. Tall they were, very tall, with horrible faces, and long white bodies that seemed to flutter and float.
One of the Gwasim shrews recoiled in horror, his paw shaking as he pointed out beneath their shelter entrance.
Yerg! I see one! There 'tis!
A vague, misty shape was gliding about outside. Martin sheathed his sword and seized a long paddle.
I've had enough of this nonsense. Let's see what these ghosts have got to say for themselves.
As the apparition drifted by again, Martin struck out with the paddle, giving it a good, hard sweep. The ghost gave a yell of surprise and collapsed into a heap. Martin grabbed the struggling mass and dragged it inside the shelter. Ripping off the flowing white cloth, he exposed a hedgehog on stilts. The creature's face was daubed thickly with some kind of white clay, and long seabird feathers were stuck into the clay. Blackened beneath the eyes and painted bright red about the mouth with plant dyes, it gave the hedgehog a fearsome appearance. It glared at Martin defiantly.
Arra now, and aren't you the bold old sea rogue? Go on now, Cully, kill me and get it over with. That fine blade you carry looks fit to do the job, you dirty murdering Omadorm.
Martin grabbed the hedgehog firmly by its clay-encrusted ear.
Listen, my friend, keep a civil tongue in your head or I'll box your ears for you. We're not sea rogues, and we don't go about slaying others willy-nilly.
A huge grin cracked the white clayed face.
Mother of all the seasons, now ain't that a mercy? By the spikes of me, fat uncle, does that fine puddin' taste as good as it smells? Could you not serve me up a large morsel of the loverly stuff, and could meself not sit next to that pretty darlin' hog maid while I show her the powers of me terrible appetite, sir?
Martin was smiling as he extended a paw. I'm Martin the Warrior of Redwall, and these are my friends, who no doubt will introduce themselves. The hedgehog shook the proffered paw vigorously.
And 'tis pleased I am to meet you, Martin, sir. I'm Murpho, son of Chief Doonspike, all-coast champion spine-tussler.
Gonf immediately took to Murpho. Sensing in him a kindred spirit, he exchanged a wink with a newcomer.
Don't you think you'd better ask your dad and the others in out of the weather, Murpho? They'll catch their death of cold, stumping about in long white nighties on a night like this. Go on, give him a shout.
Murpho stuck his head outside and roared,
Oi! Da! These beasts are friends, and they've got puddin' on the hob. Bring the boils over, will ya?
In the blink of an eye,
The shelter and the beach surrounding it was packed with hedgehogs, all untying stilts from their footpaws and casting aside their long white ghost robes. Murfo's father, Doonspike, was possibly the biggest hedgehog Martin had ever set eyes on. Introductions were made all around, with Doonspike offering his apologies for frightening them.
"Ah, 'tis sorry I am for putting the fears into honest creatures like yourselves, but we've seen that sleek boat of yours afore, so we'd be forgiven for thinking that you were the dirty scut of a fox in his flotsam that usually sail in it. Ah, yes, indeed, Martin, me old son. Well, now, isn't this all grand?"
As one, all the hedgehogs nodded and chorused, "Ah, 'tis grand, grand indeed, sir." Fermo scraped his ladle around the big pan, commenting,
"Sorry, there ain't enough puddin' to go round all your tribe."
Chief Doonspike accepted the last bowl and passed it to his son, shaking his head ruefully.
"More's the pity. But those who get none'll never know what they missed, and be no worse for the missin' of it. Hear me, son, get that down your gob, and don't go tellin' your old da how grand it tastes. Bad cess to this rotten tooth of mine. It won't abide the sweet stuff, and torments the very life of me if I go near anything sweetish, so it does."
All the hedgehog spikes rattled as they shook their heads and chorused in unison,
"Ah, yes, the old tooth torments the big feller terrible."
Trimp could not resist asking a question. "But why do you parade around the shore at night dressed as ghosts?" While Doonspike sat nursing his tooth, Murfo explained,
"Sure, to scare off the sea vermin. They're all superstitious wretches. Scaring them is far simpler than getting the half of our tribe slain in battle. It works just grand, missy. Ain't that right, boyos?"
Again, all the tribe nodded their heads and spoke together.
"Ah, yes, 'twerks just grand, grand, grand."
Still nursing the side of his jaw, which looked painfully swollen, Doonspike glanced admiringly at Martin's sword.
"By the spike of the great hog himself, 'tis a grand and powerful blade you have there, Martin, sir."
Martin unsheathed his sword, holding it forth for all to see.
"Aye, that it is. The hilt was my father's, and the blade was forged by a badger lord from a piece of a star that fell from the skies. This sword is a magic weapon."
Doonspike shook his huge head in amazement.
"Magic, you don't tell me. How so?"
He did not see the wink that passed between Martin and Gonf. Martin turned the sword so that the red pommel stone at its hilt top twinkled in the firelight.
"This stone can soothe pains and heal wounds."
The big hedgehog chief stared reverently at the stone.
"And toothaches?"
Martin smiled.
"Aye, toothaches too."
Digging a hole in the sand with his sword point, he pushed the sword in upside down. He held it in the deep, wet sand until he judged the stone was cold enough.
"Sit down here, sir. Gonf, will you get the other side of the chief and hold his head?"
Doonspike sat down gingerly. Gonf braced the hedge warrior's head still by leaning against the uninjured side. The hog looked uncertainly at Martin, who was withdrawing his sword from the sand.
"You wouldn't be going to hurt me now, would you, Martin?"
The warrior smiled reassuringly.
"Me? Hurt you? I'm not even going to touch you, chief. 'Tis the pommel stone does all the magic. Sit still and relax."
Very gently, Martin began moving the cold stone in slow circles around the patient's swollen jaw, murmuring as he did so,
"Easy now, easy. How does that feel? Nice and cool?"
Doonspike closed his eyes, leaning heavily against Gonf.
"Ah, 'tis grand, grand, like a butterfly's breath on a morn in spring. Don't stop, Martin, keep doing that. Round and round me, old rotten aching tooth."
Martin whispered soothingly in Doonspike's ear.
"Round and round with the magic stone, that's the stuff.
Is your tooth in the middle of this area I'm circling? Doonspike sighed contentedly.
Yes, so tis, so tis.
Gripping the cross-hilt with both paws, Martin whacked the pommel-stone, hard and sudden, right at the middle of the swelling, where the tooth was located.
Thump! Yargoo! I'm destroyed! He's killed me! Arg!
The entire tribe of dune hogs leaped forward. Martin swung his blade aloft, halting them with his fearsome war cry.
Eulalia!
Doonspike stopped roaring. He opened his eyes, felt the side of his jaw.
Your grand name, Martin, sir.
Trent put a pawful of sea salt in warm water and stirred until it dissolved. She gave it to Doonspike, saying, Take this and swish it around where the tooth came out, sir. 'Twill clean the hole and help it to heal. The big hedgehog patted Martin's back so heartily that he almost knocked him flat.
Sure, and I wish you'd done that when we first met. Then I would have been able to tackle that grand puddin' of yours. Martin of Redwall, you're a mighty creature, sir. Heroical you are.
The Dunehog chorus echoed their chief's sentiments.
Ah, yes, yes, heroical indeed. Isn't he the grand mouse? Oh, that he is! Grand, grand!
Murpho appealed to his father.
Da, would you have Martin and his friends sitting the night out under some battered old boat wreck? Sure, and 'twould only be good manners to invite them back to the roundhouse.
14. Trimp walked ahead of the main party with Murpho and a party of admirers, all of whom, it seemed, wanted to hold her paw lest she slip. They were deep among the dunes when Murpho stopped and tapped the side of his nose.
"Well, missy, what do you think of our roundhouse?"
Trimp looked around. All she could see was sand dunes.
"Where? I can't see any roundhouse."
The hedgehogs danced with glee, highly amused.
"Can you not see it at all, pretty one?" "Ah, sure. Maybe she's got her eyes shut. And the roundhouse staring her right in the face. She's pretty all right. Pretty short-sighted. Ha, ha, ha."
At that, Trent lost her patience.
"Very funny, I'm sure. Now would one of you stilt-legged, clay-faced buffoons show me this roundhouse?"
Murpho stepped forward to the side of the biggest dune and slid aside a screen of brushwood and dead grass, revealing an opening. Bowing low to Trimp, he bade her enter.
"How do you like it, me beauty? This whole big dune is our roundhouse, and none can find it except the dune hogs."
It was an ingenious structure, built from stones, timber, clay, and wattle, completely disguised as one massive sand dune. Inside, it was lit by lanterns and a fire glowing beneath a stone oven with secret air vents to the outside. Every beast sat upon woven rush mats, and a silence fell as Doonspike entered and threw up his paws.
"Do we know who we are?"
Every hedgehog held up their paws and answered,
"Sons of the sand and daughters of the dunes."
The chieftain looked around until he had selected a very young beast, who was still learning the tribe's rules. A question-and-answer session started between master and novice. Older dune hogs watched, nodding sagely.
"Do we fight our enemies?"
"Dune hogs would rather use fright than fight."
"How tall is a dune hog?"
"As tall as his stilts."
"Where do dune hogs live?"
"In a roundhouse where no beast knows."
"Why don't they know?"
"'Cause we cover our tracks."
"And when is it your turn to cover tracks?"
"Dawn till night, first quarter of the moon."
"Right. You did grand, young'un, just grand."
"I thank ye, Chief Doonspike."
Food was served amid a babble of chatter. Doonspike plumped his huge bulk down between Martin and Trimp, knocking Murpho out of the way.
"Ah, that's better now. My turn to sit next to the pretty maid."
He tweaked Trimp's head spikes before turning to Martin.
"These young'uns must learn the rules, you know. Sit ye and welcome to our old home. Eat hearty now."
The crew of the honeysuckle soon got into the habit of eating like dune hogs. There was a board piled high with wafer-thin rye flour pancakes, and between each four creatures, two earthenware pots were placed, steam arising from both. One of the pots contained a thick stew consisting of overboiled potato, finely chopped cabbage, wild onions, and various types of shellfish. This was spooned onto a pancake and rolled up carefully. One end was twisted a couple of times to stop the contents spilling out. Gonf was an expert within seconds. He nudged a nearby dune hog.
"Good idea this, mate. Saves a lot of plate washing."
"Oh, that it does, sir. 'Tis a grand old idea."
Gonf, the perfect mimic, answered him in dune hog idiom.
"Ah, sure it is. Grand, grand."
Every beast within hearing chuckled appreciatively. When the first pot was finished, there was still about half the amount of pancakes left. These they used in like manner with the contents of the second pot, a sweet hot mass of pulp berries and honey with some strange tangy spice mixed in. Dune Spike chomped away blissfully.
"Ah, thank ye, Mother Nature, for that good old sweet stuff. 'Twas meself was thinking I might never taste it again until yourself magicked me rotten tooth away, Martin."
For entertainment, the dune hogs laid on an exhibition of spine tussling. A circle was cleared, and two contestants tied on pairs of half-size learning stilts. They stood balancing at the ring's inner edge. Then, a few oldsters, acting as referees and judges, shouted,
"Hold you circle! No paw touching now! Get set! Tussle!"
The pair stumped adroitly out, charging one another. They were two fully grown males and had lots of supporters.
"Ah, gwan there, doggo, make him eat sand.
Get into the great lump, Paco. Throw him spike o'er stilts and let's see the soles of his footpaws.
Watch the devil now, doggo. Look out for those sweeps with his stilts.
Go on, tussle, will ye, tussle."
Both hedgehogs circled a while, then met in the middle with a resounding bump of heads. They locked head spikes and began trying to throw each other over. Not being allowed to touch one another with their paws made it very hard. Sweating and grunting, they pushed back and forth, every now and again trying a side hop to unbalance the unwary one.
"Now, doggle, now! Give him the old side head twist!
Use the 1-2 forward butt, Paco, and you'll tussle him!"
In the end, Doggle triumphed. He took the advice using a combination of the side-head twist and a left stilt sweep. With a roar of surprise, Pakel spun once in the air, stilts flying high to land flat on his back. Cheers rang out from Doggle's supporters as he leaned down and rapped on his opponent's stilts thrice, which is considered a very sporting gesture in spine-tussling circles. Now the dune hogs were calling for the chief to enter the ring, but he shook his head, smiling. Murpho yelled across at him,
"Gwan da! Show 'em how a real champion tussles, or is your belly getting too grand?"
This aroused jeers and laughter. Still smiling, Dune Spike plodded down to the ring's edge.
"Are you fit to be thrown, Doggle?"
Doggle performed an agile dance on his stilts.
"Aye, chief, I am that. Though I'm thinking 'twill take some hog younger and faster than yourself to throw me, you fat old omadorm."
Dune Spike raised one eyebrow. There was menace behind his smile as he tied on one stilt.
"Ah, sure. Maybe I am getting on in seasons. But let's see if we can't make you kiss the sand with your back spikes."
A gasp arose from the audience as Dune Spike stood erect.
"Will you look at that? He's going to tussle with only one stilt. Doggle will make crab bait of the old fool."
One of the judges pointed at Dune Spike.
"Do you not know you're wearing only one stilt, chief?"
"I do."
"And you wish to tussle like that tonight?"
"I do."
The judge shook his head in resignation.
"Right. Hold your circle now. No paw touching. Get set. Tussle."
The agility and skill of one so old and heavy shook Martin. Dune Spike bounded across the ring on his one stilt, meeting Doggle, who was yet not halfway across. Down went the chief's huge head, spikes bristling, and he caught his opponent a mighty butt, locking spikes and twisting powerfully. Doggle went sailing through the air sideways to land amid the spectators. Roaring with laughter, Doonspike hopped over to knock his opponent's stilts thrice amid wild applause. Then he looked at Martin.
"Would you like to tie the old stilts on and tussle with me, Martin of Redwall?"
Shaking his head, Martin held up both paws, laughing. "I'd sooner tangle teeth with a shark than tussle with you, sir. You're a warrior born." Gonf chimed in.
"Martin's a warrior too, you know. And sure, he's a grand one with the old sword. Let him show ye."
Martin shook his head wearily at the mouse thief. "Gonf, if you want any exhibitions of sword dancing, you can do them yourself. I don't like showing off every time we meet new friends." Gonf shrugged glumly. Trimp felt sorry for him and immediately tackled Martin. "It's not a case of you showing off, Martin. It's wanting to show you off to our friends. He's so proud of you, as we all are. Couldn't you manage just one little example of your blade skill?" Martin threw his paws about them both.
"When you put it like that, I've no option, missy. Forgive my bad manners to you, Gonf.
Right, let's see what we can do with these stilts." At Martin's request, the dune hogs thrust two stilts upright in the sand and balanced another one across their tops. The three stilts looked like a door frame standing freely in the middle of the ring. The warrior bade every beast stand clear. A silence fell as they eagerly watched Martin take up position, holding the sword over one shoulder in a classic fighting stance. After weighing the stilts up, he hopped a half pace back and went into action with a roar. "Redwall!" Like a shimmering blur of light, the fabulous blade hit the topmost horizontal stilt, sending it flying in the air. Almost within the same breath, the sword zipped left and right, chopping both the upright stilts clean through their middles. Before the top stilt had hit the ground, Martin's sword severed it in midair. Even before the thunderstruck audience could shout or applaud, Martin had sheathed his battle blade and was sitting calmly next to Doonspike. Amid the tumultuous applause, stamping foot paws and rattling spikes, the hedgehog chieftain found his voice.
"Well, stagger me spikes and pickle me paws, Martin of Redwall, you'd be a useful mouse to have around any place. I thought me own two eyes were telling fibs to me. Sure, and I still don't believe I seen you do what you did, sir."
It was enough to end the battle play. A great old hogwife took out a curious stringed instrument and began twanging it with her head spikes. Another began shaking a tambourine, and a third took up his little paw drum and beat a lively tattoo. Murpho seized Trimp's paw.
"Ha-har! Can you dance and sing, miss?"
Trimp skipped down to the ring ahead of him. "Just try me. I recognize that tune. 'Tis Hog Stamp Paw Clap." Setting the sand flying, both young creatures went at the dance with a will, putting in all the fancy steps they knew. "Hog stamp, paw clap, all around the floor. Shake those spikes, that's what they're for. Day is ended, work is done. Hog stamp, paw clap, everyone. Curtsy the pretty maid, bow down, sir. You've never danced with one so fair. Take your partner, 1, 2, 3. Swing to the left, love, follow me. Rap, 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 let's hear those paws. I'll stamp mine if you stamp yours. Round and round, now jump up high. Look at that young hog maid fly. Hog stamp, paw clap, move to the right. I could dance with you all night. Skip into the middle of the ring. Raise your voice, let's hear you sing. Can't you see, merry are we? Here's the land, and there's the sea. Promenade, let's hear you say, honor your partner, jig away. With a hog and a stamp and a clap, 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 raise the dust up, slap, slap, slap. Beat that drum and pluck those strings. Ain't we all such lucky things? Easy with the spikes now. Hedgehogs!" As Trimp and Murpho halted, the music struck up again, and nearly every beast began dancing. Doonspike and Martin sat tapping time with tankards of seafoam, a fine beer that the dune hogs brewed themselves. Martin smiled as he watched Chugger kicking up his heels with a tiny hog maid and leaned toward Doonspike. "Guess who's just changed from a squirrel to a hedgehog? Ha ha! Yesterday he was a sea rogue captain.
Doonspike took a deep swig and wiped a paw across his mouth.
"And good luck to the little sprigs," says I. "See, Martin, your pal the otter thinks he's a bit of an old hedgehog, too."
Martin was amazed at the transformation that had come over Fulgrim. The scarred otter was roaring with laughter as he whirled a hogmaid around and around. Doonspike nudged Martin.
"Sure, and I wish that otter was one of me hogs. The boyo looks as if he'd stand no old buck from any beast."
The warrior winked at his friend. "That's the truth, mate. No beast messes with Fulgrim twice." Doonspike was still watching Fulgrim as he answered.
"Beasts without fear are far and few. I knew soon as I clapped eyes on you and Fulgrim that you were two of that rare old stock. Only other two I ever heard of was a mouse like yourself and a black squirrel. 'Twas said that they were a grand old pair of battlers who didn't know the meaning of the word fear. No, sir."
Martin came alert. "What were their names? Where did they come from, chief? Do you know?" Doonspike had eaten and drunk copiously, and he was tired.
"You know, I'm not certain. The mouse had a short kind of name. The squirrel now was her name Rangfarl or something. I can't think properly some days. Me old head must be terrible muddled from all that spine tussling. Wait now. I heard it said that the mouse came from north of here, up the coast a ways. Though 'tis meself would be lying if I told ye any more. Sometimes I wonder if there are more butterflies flying round in me head than there are out on the dune flowers."
Martin patted the old chieftain's paw. "Never mind, matey. Though I'd be obliged if you could tell me how far the north shore is." Doonspike lay back on the rush mats and yawned cavernously.
"Oh, 4 days about. You'll easily know, 'cause the weather gets much colder and you'll see a great old rocky point sticking out into the sea. Martin, I can't keep me eyes open, so I'll bid you good night and peaceful dreams."
When the festivities had ceased and the lanterns had been doused, Martin sat awake in the firelight's glow. End of Side 3. To continue, turn the cassette over.